Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Rad Gontos. Hello, hello out there, everybody. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
I see you're in your summer cargoes. you know that my co-host Craig Sullivan on the Check Out California radio show. It's so new, I can't even remember the name. Check Out California radio show, which is a hospitality show we launched every other week after the Rad Life, which we do every week on Wednesdays. He actually was so taken by your cargo-ness.
See?
That he, I don't know whether it was promise or threatened that he would wear cargo pants. So if next time, which will be next week, where we have the Check Out California show, check us out because I'm going to be surrounded by two Irishmen that are 10 years my senior,
yep,
wearing cargo pants. And if that
10 years you're better.
10 years are better. Well, yes. And if that isn't worth
tuning in
on
for
its own, tuning in on the show, then, you know, we'll have some other hospitality stuff for you, too.
That's right.
But today, coming back to today, well, thanks for joining us on The Rad Life. Do you believe we're almost like 3 years we've been doing this?
I can't believe it. I'm aging in front of you.
And I still actually have some people that are watching. So, you know, maybe we're, you know,
doing something right.
We're doing something right. But we've got a real treat actually today. And I can't wait to get into this topic because it's something that I have been preaching for a long time. It goes beyond the print. It goes beyond the, you know, the resume or blah, 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 all that, mm-hmm, the traditional ways, especially with new media. And you're seeing it play out in front of us in traditional media, just on TV, like, you know, where people are just come out of nowhere and all of a sudden they're a personality and everything they, mm-hmm, do is scrutinized and they're under the microscope and what have you. So anyway, we're going to be talking about branding. And we're going to be talking about branding with, are you in OC? You are in OC, right?
Yeah.
In Orange County, branding guru. Costa Mesa, just down the street. Yo, you had a long commute, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, she just flew in.
I was on time.
That's an old joke. I almost did a Jack Benny right there, didn't I? That's hilarious. Okay.
Jack Benny, go Google him.
Go Google him, right.
Yeah, if you don't know who that is.
Yeah, I just flew in and my arm's tired. Ann Bennett, who is a branding guru, and what's, let's give people your website right off the bat. What's the website?
It's AnnBennettMarketing.com.
Wow, really?
I just decided, like that? Well, yeah, it's a little bit of a story, but yeah, I just decided.
You know, I do want to talk to you about that, though, mm-hmm, but, right? Because there's an aspect to that, right? Like domain names and just, you know, people have a very short span of attention, and it's like, don't confuse your brand. Don't make people have to work hard to find it, right? Okay, uh-huh. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
As simple as a website address. So why don't we start, which we do on this show all the time, is give us a little background. Is this something that you've always done? Is this something you came to later on? I keep referring people back to something that I learned in business school from Peter Drucker, who said that, you know, people...
You name dropper, you.
Yeah, he's good.
Peter Drucker, Claremont Graduate School.
Yes.
Okay.
Just has to drop that in every show.
At the age of 20, went for an MBA.
Something I learned from Peter Drucker. Peter and I were just sitting around having coffee one day. And
yeah, Peter. Oh, Pete.
Pete.
You know. Pete actually was a very monotone lecturer.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, he passed away. Yeah. But he was actually brilliant in one aspect. I mean, a lot of ways, but I think his claim to fame, the way I saw it, was that he was able to take language that was maybe could be potentially complicated jargon and, mm-hmm, industry, you know, technical lingo, especially when we're talking manufacturing industry,
sure,
at that era, at that time. And he allowed people, like your dad, Paul,
yes,
to grow through the corporate structure and gain skill sets through his writing style that simplified the format for people to grow into management positions and leadership positions and stuff from manufacturing, from the floor, mm-hmm, and so forth. And I think that was the genius of Peter Drucker, is that he was able to every man the language,
mm-hmm,
for the skill sets that you needed to grow it professionally.
And that's when you could do it. I mean, we've talked over you before on the show. My dad was born in 1920, since passed away a few years ago. But when he started, he went on the factory floor as a kid. He lived very poor in the ghetto of Detroit and was half Polish, and that's where all the Poles went. All his relatives went to work in the factory, fought in World War II, came back, said, okay, when are you going to start in the factory? He went, hell no. Well, what else are you going to do? There was no, he didn't have any college, didn't have any degree. That was, it was very social stratified and, right. and that. And the Poles were the last people that came over. They were the lowest rung in the immigrant ladder in Detroit in those days. And so he took a job. They were offering a few programs to flyboys. My dad was a bomber pilot, and some
which
guy,
is some of the similarities that are happening, actually parallels that are happening today, right?
Yeah,
with
giving
returning
veterans
military
a chance,
and
right.
GI
mm-hmm.
builds, right?
Gave him a chance, and so then he became a sales, became a district manager in Fargo, North Dakota. Had to look it up on a map because he'd never been outside the state or the city, and rose up to be a vice president of Chrysler Corporation without any college or anything, starting off in the factory floor. That stuff, I don't know if that happens.
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna bring it around, because I think there's a lot of parallels that are taking place today that are similar to that. The industries involved may be different. Mm-hmm. We went from that to where, you know, your generation, my generation, the parents basically saying that, you know, you need to get that education under your belt, you
right.
need to get that degree framed on your wall in order to make it to the next level.
That's what he thought. He was terribly embarrassed that he had missed all that.
Right, but I think what's interesting about the world we live in mm-hmm. today is that it parallels that time, in that we have almost gone to the extreme. Like, the paper doesn't mean as much anymore. You can go to the next level. I mean, you know, back in 1985 when I went for my master's degree, The NBA, you know, it's $50,000 a year, buys you a lot of beer, and the future's so bright that I can wear shades. Remember those songs? And those things mattered, and like happens, economics 101, when you have an abundance of something, the incremental value of it
goes down.
Right. Very true. And now we are going back to society which is basically appreciative, I think, in an interesting way, to the artisan craftsman, to the you know, the highest paid person is a tradesman in New York who's a plumber, a mechanic that works on an Alfa Romeo, basically, and it's a collector car.
Electricians,
right? Electrician comes in and if he stares at your socket at your that came out wrong. If he stares at your electrical socket,
stare at my socket.
I'm staring at your socket. He's across the way from me. I can't help it. But if you stare at your socket, he charges you $70. And then if he gets parts, then he comes back and it's another 65. I mean, it's interesting. It's more expensive than going to see a doctor with a copay of $20.
Here's the other parallel, and then maybe this will lead to we'll try and bring this into your guest.
Is it going to come back to branding?
What is it? Actually, everything we are talking about, and the reason why I'm letting this drag. I mean, Paul doesn't give me a chance. You know, he basically is going to jump in and throw his 2 cents, 3 cents, 4 cents, and 5 cents.
40 minutes later, we'll be talking about branding.
But all of these things, if anybody's listening, you should take as a thread here is that every single thing that you do is a representation of who you are, whether it's conscious or unconscious.
Oh, you sound like a hippie now.
And, dude.
There's a psychology to
it. But everything you do is that. And when you are under the microcosm of social media and you're under the microscope, whether you are a professional on a social media called LinkedIn, or you're a person who owns your own company and you have a company page on Facebook, whether you're in the service industry, whether you're in the product industry, whether you are a professional, every thing you do, I hate to sound manipulative, but you have to have a strategy behind it, because somebody is paying attention. If every picture you have on Facebook as a lifestyle reporter, and a certain friend of mine knows who I'm talking about, right? A lifestyle reporter that writes about luxury and lifestyle and food and beverage. If every picture that you have, you're holding a wine glass, somebody who doesn't like you is going to turn that into the fact that you're an alcoholic.
Right.
Okay, that is part of your brand.
It's also going to be a little snoozy.
Brand presence may be unintentional, but it's still there.
This week you failed. Usually you bring it back to...
I did bring it back. I never left it.
Here's the thing. It's all about everything being congruent to whatever your brand actually is.
But it can't be a happenstance or accidental, is what I'm trying to say. It has to be strategic. There has to be some level of strategy.
You got to think about every picture you take and everything you put on.
No, not to the point where you're not being – because here's the other –
It just needs to align with your brand. If it's not aligning with your brand, then people are like, oh, well, you're a badass, but here you are being like a meditator.
A goody two-shoe. Yeah.
Correct. And the word that you use in the question that you sent me, which I say all the time to this gentleman over there, is authenticity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and that's what you're talking about, is that
really
it has to be authentic. Andy. And that's what you're talking about. If it's authentically you, then you're not basically having to watch everything. Now, you know, it's like sales, right? You have people that are going to be a learned skill, and there are people that have the friggin' gift of gab, right?
Right.
So there's and there's a hybrid of all kinds of ranges in between. So if you are not aware about the importance of branding, then you should be.
But let's talk about it for a minute, because
why is it important?
Personally,
then?
I think branding. We've been doing that, branding and marketing, since we were little kids.
So when you put the title on it, it makes it
when
sound like...
When you start
like,
to make a branding and marketing, everyone's like, "Who? What's that? And I have to be somebody else, and it's not really me."
Right.
And all of that, to me, is completely bogus.
It's canned, right? It's trying to standardize something.
Oh, let me make myself into... For me, for instance, I'm kind of like this casual rock star,
Casual rock star. I like that. I'm a casual
versus a formal rock star.
versus glam rock star.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
They're very different. And so it's a
little
bit.
That's true, too. Yeah. David Bowie was glam rock and all that. It was glam rock when I was in high school.
So it's a little bit different. I think, you know, it has to do with your personality. It's a combination of things. It's your essence, your personality style, who you are, the things that you love, the things that you hate.
Right.
And combined with your skill, right? So combined with what it is you do.
Oh, you're actually asking people to have a sense of awareness that is detailed enough that they have a consciousness about this. Where most people...
I work with my clients.
Right. But,
and yeah, it's a surprise for a lot of them.
Although, to your point, it's something that isn't foreign. It is actually very intrinsic to their personality. It's just maybe somewhere down the road they became a little bit more, contained. Maybe they lost their sort of sense of person in trying to conform and fit in.
Go to school. I think when you're small, when you're a kid, you're just running around being excited.
You know,
about life.
I used to get chances to go speak in front of an MBA class at Pepperdine, not name dropping because it's appropriate, okay? And what we would do is that this professor was a service marketing professor, and he would give them an opportunity to do a spa as a concept, right? So mm-hmm. an urban spa, resort spa, whatever.
But
the idea was to develop the concept, the integrated brand, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. And how you're going to basically differentiate in the value propositions and all this stuff, right? Boy, it's really nice to talk to somebody across the table that gets this, and I don't have to explain all this thing.
Understanding the language.
Yeah. Unique value proposition, UPV, is not something you put on your skin in case, to protect yourself from the sun.
It's not
a sun lotion, right? It's unique value proposition.
Yeah, right.
But the thing about it is, I was presenting one time, and I would show them examples of my creative work, and, you know, here's how you differentiate a space, and this is sort of just branding in a box in three-dimensionality. Mm-hmm. And one guy was feverishly writing everything I was saying, and I'm like, I know I don't say enough interesting stuff for you to be taking down every word, right? And then he puts up his hand when I said, anybody has a question? And he goes, I have a question. How do you be creative?
Yeah.
Right. We could talk. That's
how do you be creative?
Give me the three steps.
I'm like,
I'm going to talk about that on my Facebook Live.
Right, but I'm like, you might as well ask me how do I breathe, right? And I said, and then I turned around and I said, okay, so how many people in the class consider themselves creative? And there were like two hands that gingerly kind of went up, kind of skittishly in the background. I wasn't. No, I'm not sure. You know, kind of thing. It was that kind of.
I don't know how to draw.
Right. And then I said, okay, so if I had asked that same question when you guys were in like fourth grade, how many hands would have gone up?
Boom.
Every
All
single
them,
hand
right.
almost went out.
That's true.
Right. So we do ourselves, I think, an interesting thing in trying to conform people because there's a standard that works. That's sort of a high rate of return kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a throwback to the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
The idea that you could sit
the assembly line
for 8 hours and put the pencil at the top of your page when you're done. All of that is like condensing.
So can I bring a historical perspective in here?
Just one second. So interestingly, in the same class, everybody felt that they were really hip and cool and individuals, yet every single one of them used an Apple and wore jeans. And
It was the same hip and cool look. I mean, that's a brand.
So go ahead, mister. Give me a historical context.
Here's where I was going to go, and you finally found your way there. We started off talking about my father and his era, which was the World War II, post-World War II generation.
By the way, if you haven't picked up yet, and there's a certain part of this show that is Paul's therapy session.
Yes. I get it. It's like a dual thing. Exactly. I didn't know I was going to be with two men today.
So,
awesome.
One of the things that his era perfected was this idea of similarity. They weren't individuals. Right. They were corporate men. They wore the corporate suit.
They
had the outfit.
They had the outfit. They bought the culture. My dad didn't have a personal brand. He adopted the corporate brand, and he bought it. And he lived it. He acted it. He was loyal to it until the day he died. We have created, the baby boomers, their children, created this idea of individuality.
You created chaos.
Yeah.
You
chaos
really did. You yeah. created chaos.
Chaos
you,
is part of
you,
it.
You took away the safe good. Safety edge of the pool.
Safe way to go. The safe way to
I know
look,
what to wear. I know what I look blue. Like. Right. I walk in. I put in my time. I drink a couple of martinis at lunch. Mm-hmm. And yes. I basically get a paycheck. And if I do that long enough, I have enough of a nest egg to retire
exactly.
somewhere in Florida and play golf.
So now we
and
have
if
the
I'm
opportunity.
I'm lucky, I crack. You know, I just fall on the eighth or ninth hole. And basically, they launch. And I'm done.
So now we have the opportunity. And what she's saying, you're both saying, is the obligation to then stand out. We can't
and it's not and
anymore.
It's not and it, I mean I don't know if you agree with me, and
we
I don't
can't
think
be anonymous
I,
anymore.
Even when it's fun, it's still work. I mean, there's a part of it that, and I think by tapping into your individual already, you know, ingrained, what do you call it, like a rebel?
Yeah, I call it your rebel voice.
Your rebel voice.
Rebel soul branding.
But you're asking people to trust the rebel voice. Mm-hmm. You're asking people to embrace mm-hmm. the rebel voice. And
the one that they were squelching.
Right.
It's kind of they have
and you're asking
voice.
Them to do this in a society that tells them conform.
Right. It's a little everything
or does it anymore?
Is paradoxical, right?
Yes, it still does, Paul. I think it still does.
To a degree.
Because my dad's generation was all about conformity. That's what strangled us. And we're going to be ourselves. We're going to find ourselves. We're going to express ourselves.
It's a little less than that. We were talking about the 60s, growing up in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, kind of the expression that was occurring and the revolution, if you will, that was occurring in a sense.
You mean by the same people that then went and lived in suburban houses and drove BMWs
yes,
and called themselves yuppies?
Right, who later transformed into something else as well.
I mean, and now are trying to reconnect with the...
It all kind of goes around. Yeah. It goes around like fashion, right? But I think, you know, the point really is, it's true, it does take courage to brand, right? It takes courage to
make a statement. It's an opportunity for personal growth, really, right? Yeah.
To me, building a business is all about growth and development. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest growth and development program.
Whether you sign up for it or not.
You find yourself in it.
You find yourself in it.
Yeah.
So why, you know, I asked you the question, I don't know that you gave me the answer. Did you always do this, or did this is something that you did later on? Did you do something before?
Well, I think that's,
how did you get into
doing
this?
Yeah, it's kind
of
interesting, like, how did I get into it? I know as a child, I was always a little bit left of center in terms of what girls were supposed to do.
Right.
You know, or how women, you know, the whole idea was, you know, women got to be two things. You could be a nurse or a teacher. Oh, three things. You could be a housewife.
Yeah.
Right? That was the options. And I was definitely not going to do any of that.
You wanted door number four.
Yeah, I was like, there's something else bigger and better, and I have a call, if you will. I call it the rebel call that's pulling me.
Maybe it's a rebel yell to go back
something.
To that. You know,
it can be a rebel yell as well. I think, you know,
I'm an old Civil War buff, the rebel yell.
I think it has to do with being a creative. Mm-hmm. Part of it, you know, mm-hmm. When you're creative, you're really looking at the world differently than how.
So how do you
most
how
of people
do you
look exp- at
how
it?
How did you express that creativity?
For
younger?
Me, yeah. I became a painter.
Uh-huh.
I went to New York City for my career and mm-hmm. showed in Soho and sold my work and that kind of thing. And of course, I had a job as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up working in magazine design
mm-hmm.
and art direction.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I started at Boating Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first woman.
Boating Magazine?
Yeah,
boating and yachts. And,
big.
Yeah,
yeah. First woman in the art department at Popular Mechanics Magazine,
mm-hmm.
shooting guns and driving cars, super fun. And I ended up at Vogue as art director designer at Vogue Magazine. So it's a very eclectic.
And give me a time frame so I can understand that.
I went to New York in 1980.
Okay.
After I graduated from college, and it was like obviously the place to go.
Interesting time to be in New York.
Very great time to be in New York in terms of the art world.
Sure.
You know, it was booming.
Sure.
Soho was bustling.
Well, you were coming right off the 70s, and you had a lot of 80s innovation. You had Ian Schrager. You had a whole bunch of stuff that was happening.
Terrific clubs and
art. The Limelight.
Innovative
cuisine. Yeah, the Limelight.
Culinary was happening. A lot of, you know, that's very cool.
Area. And the music was incredible. Was, Mud Club and CBGBs were going like crazy. So there was a tremendous amount of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like someday I'll tell you my story about the Limelight. But anyway, that's all another story.
You want to sit in the hot seat?
Someday, Rod, when you really want to hear a good story, I'll tell you the story of the Limelight.
So you're working graphics. You were working in the publishing industry. And then you were also artist.
Right. So I had kind of a double thing going on.
But you never slept, did you?
Who sleeps?
Exactly. In New York City in the 80s, right?
No.
Yeah, right.
We're out.
Right.
Every night.
Between your deadlines on the publication side and basically the showings, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of interesting stories.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think, you know, for me, it became this, as an artist, as well as having this kind of storytelling graphics background, it became my kind of sweet spot is how to uncover an interesting story and an interesting message, and then have it be created visually in words
to represent it so other people to share it.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
So did you always? Do you think you always had that sort of inquisitive, explorative kind of
totally passionately creative about everything?
Yeah.
Oh, why do you like that? Oh, what's that about?
Absorb everything.
Yeah, just. And I do that today. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about, we were talking about creativity earlier, and it's like, when you get relaxed and allow yourself to really love life and all the things in it, it gets really interesting.
Yeah, and everything stimulates and everything inspires, and you go down these little rabbit holes on things, and whether they lead to anything or not, the journey down the rabbit hole is interesting.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. And I think
that's whole creative
I think
mechanism.
A lot of people that are, if anybody's watching right now, what you're hearing is something that sometimes we rob ourselves of in society. I mean, I tell people, whatever you do, be careful. It's a genuine risk, okay, that is self-inflicted, that you rob yourself of the uniqueness of your own story.
Mm-hmm. People don't, in my experience and the people that I work with, they don't think they have an interesting story.
Right. Who would be interested?
In, who cares?
Would be interested to listen here, sit here and listen to us basically talk.
Who cares what I've done in my life or how I've done it or what I think? And that's where we go.
Right.
That's where we go in the personal brand.
And the minute you accept that as a reality, part of your life's reality, other things become easier to comply with, compromise on, and sort of accept. And at the same time, you're somehow unhappy, you're somehow unfulfilled, there's not really a sense of contentment regardless of what goals you achieve, and you really don't understand why this is how you're feeling, because you're basically ignoring that inner voice, that rebel voice that you have that is uniquely you. And we don't, and I mean, I see some people on here, Jeff is on here, hey Jeff, some people on here, that some of the people that are creatives that I know that are out there, that they understand this. I mean, we understand this. We all have had that moment, maybe we can remember it, maybe we don't, where we had to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow this sort of packaged, yes, it will lead to some success, whatever, some sort of happiness that society tells you this is the way you should go to be safe.
Right.
Or do you take that risk of actually exploring and finding out and embracing that? To very, very, very similar to what you guys did in the 60s as far as self-expression. But I think
it's been our whole generation.
But
I think we've constantly, most of us have followed the road less traveled, to use the Robert Frost analogy.
Well, I just think it's creative people in general, because I deal with a lot of creatives in my business, and also healers and therapists and people like that. There is that rebel.
So
and
why,
even in business, there's a rebel.
So why is it important?
To do branding?
Yeah. Let's keep it to the conversation kind of we're having, because branding, like you were saying, we start putting a title on it, and it's like, oh, this is formal thing,
right?
But yes, what we're talking about is branding. Why is it important to listen to that rebel voice? Why is it important to spend the time, whether it's instantaneous or over a summer or whatever, to get in touch with that makes you unique as a brand, as a person, as an offering, as a presence, as an existence on the planet, basically? Because what do they say? You are the best form of your you or something that's out there. I don't know. I'm not quoting it correctly, but something where, you know, there's nobody better at you than you.
Right. Everybody else is taken.
Right.
Be yourself.
Yeah. Be yourself.
Right.
So why is it important then?
Well, I think it goes back to that sense we were talking about, self-satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
The sense of knowing that you are important or you do play a part in the bigger picture. It's not like you have to be a superstar or rock star to impact other people. But when you can understand why other people find you fascinating, why do other people like you?
Isn't that arrogant? Isn't that...
I guess some people
devil's advocate here, but isn't that arrogant? Isn't that like a little bit too full of yourself?
I'm all about arrogance and bragging. So, you know, mostly for women.
Yeah.
Mostly for women.
Right.
Guys don't have any usually have no problem with arrogance.
Oh, but we hide it. We hide it through the bravado. There's a lot of insecurity with guys.
Right,
I think,
but if you actually owned your genius, I call it, your uniqueness, what makes you...
You.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Then you can breathe, you can relax.
And would you say not only getting in touch with that, but also, I hate to put it this way, forgiving yourself for that being who you are, basically, that you are who you are, you accept, there's an acceptance factor that is very important, because you could get a sense of who you are, but then
not like it.
I got these rough edges.
It is about embracing, right? You know, acceptance, I think, is a really great word, because a lot of times there's things about our personalities that we don't like.
Right.
But that when you frame it in a particular way, it becomes very positive. And if you frame it in a different way, it becomes negative.
Right?
It's like you were saying, oh, well, I'm so full. You know, wouldn't that be like, mm-hmm. I'm full of myself? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, woohoo, you know, go for it.
Well, the word selfish.
Yeah, selfish is great.
It became this horrible thing, right? And I tell people all the time, I said, there's nothing wrong with being self-aware, or if you want to call it selfish, because if you can't be selfish with yourself, you will not have resources to share with others. If you are being selfless all the time, you will become drained.
And burned out.
Burned out.
Right.
Right.
And you'll feel like the life is sucked out of you.
But you know we do.
It
right?
won't
so,
be
so,
inspiring.
So you want to hear something arrogant? You owe it to others.
That's good.
Okay? To be selfish with yourself so that they can benefit from what you have to offer them.
Yeah, so they can get the full experience of you.
Right.
Right? Like, that's
what
everybody
wants. Whether they like it or not.
They want the full experience.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, it all sorts of different flavors for all sorts of different
people. But I think
that's
an exciting component. I mean, I think it's something, you know, it's like, and we can get really large on this thing and start talking about, you know, people who have hesitation and resistance to diversity, be it on any level, be it on an ethnic level, be it on a sexual, orientation mm-hmm. level, whatever, okay? There's a certain amount of energy and effort that is put into having people conform. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it arises from a scare, a worry that, you know, we don't want to rock the boat. Conforming is the better way to go. But I think there's so much freedom. Not irresponsibility, by the way. Okay,
no, freedom. Actually,
freedom.
Ownership.
Empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
In basically accepting that unique value proposition that is you.
Right.
Right.
And when you can do that.
And then the courage to share it.
Yeah.
So can I be selfish for a moment and play a commercial?
Paul's going to be selfish right now, because if he's not, we can't keep the show going.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Let's do that. We'll be right
back.
Which
is really for your own benefit, these
people.
Go ahead.
That's right.
have been listening to the Rad Life.
Okay, so you guys.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home?
Okay, you're ready.
A full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out? Or even call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com.
All right, here we go.
And find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
Oh, I was looking to be something very clever here. Wait a second. Oh, it didn't work.
Okay, so this show is not brought to you by clever people. No. What were you trying to do, Paul?
I was trying to play He's a Rebel by the Crystals.
Oh, He's a Rebel by the Crystals.
Oh,
okay.
I would play Born This Way by Lady Gaga.
Okay, why don't you find that? We'll play that for Emma as we head out. But, you know,
can I ask a question before you launch into your deep philosophical dive here?
Sure.
Are we the first generation, the baby boomer, because this is about aging, that totally threw out the rules and rewrote everything? We were hippies, then we were yuppies, and now we're something different, and we're trying to reimagine ourselves. And where does this take this into the next phase of life? Will we be rebranding ourselves to the day we die? Will we be experimenting and trying new things?
Smart. If you want to be alive and vivacious and doing stuff, yeah, you would just keep rebranding.
And not just alive as in like on sustainable living, but actually alive. Yeah. And life support doesn't have to come with a machine. You do that to yourself
exactly. Sometimes.
You just sustain. You don't thrive. You want to take a stab at that, Anne, or do you want me to answer it? I mean, Paul is saying basically, and I think it's a moment of bravado and ego a little bit, that, you know, is it the baby boomers that were the first generation to actually, you know, risk and kind of go off the beaten path and kind of take the road less traveled? What do you think?
Well, I think we were talking about this before we started the show. I think it's an interesting way to think about it in the United States, mm-hmm. particularly. But I was also saying to him, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, I think it started with Socrates. That was probably original.
Thank you. That's exactly. Right. I was going to say the same thing. I think, if anything, the encouraging thing about this is that there's always been people willing to look beyond something or around something.
How about
or
Columbus?
Through something
or
else.
You're going to fall off the edge of the earth if you did that.
Yeah, so unless you're going to claim Columbus as a baby boomer, Paul, I think
it's a part of the human spirit.
Yeah, the go west young man, the explorers, the...
Well, I was going to say, you know, like Alexander the Great going in a different direction. You know, the history book and the literature, you know, people breaking off and going in a different direction. Religion, you know, Calvinism. I mean, there's so many examples of people that are not. And I think, I don't know if it all comes down to the same motivation, but there's a certain amount of dissatisfaction with the status quo.
Yeah.
Individually or societally or on a greater scale. And whether through disruptive
means
or peaceful means or whatever, choosing to explore another option.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting you said it because one of my favorite ads ever was the Apple Think Different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about that. Mm-hmm. It was like, here's all these crazy people,
mm-hmm.
and they're the ones that are out kind of making the changes or doing mm-hmm. things quite differently than others and making that impact. And I can totally relate to that.
Well, and if that ad was not touching something, giving voice to something that maybe had not been said or people didn't know how to express, it wouldn't have been successful. I mean, that's the other thing about effective advertising, right?
Absolutely.
Is if it touches and tunes into something that I have this feeling I cannot explain, I don't know what I'm going through, and then something speaks to me in such a way that's like, aha.
They got me.
Right?
I think
maybe this is a good point to transition to the importance of storytelling, because advertising, I mean, what's my favorite one now is the Boys to Men basically doing the little list of side effects from medication behind the pharmacist at CVS. You know, the woman walks up to the pharmacist and she's going to get a prescription, and he says, well, there's a few side effects, and she goes, like what? And there's Boys to Men behind him.
You're going to be gassy, baby.
Oh, yeah. And they're singing all this stuff. Gassy. Yeah. You know? And I think it's interesting that we tell stories. We've always told stories.
Always.
Paul and I have had this conversation.
Since the beginning of man.
Right.
That's right.
That it's really
whatever.
Interesting.
Tribal
that,
stories.
That we have right. We have come almost full circle. We call it even the Bible. You know, how did it actually get sent on from one generation to the other?
Stories.
It was storytelling. And it was the verbal storytelling before the written format. And then the written format came around. And now we've come full circle. We don't read anymore. We listen. Mm-hmm. We view. We
tell
look.
Stories.
We tell stories. And yet. And yet, as a society, we have a parallel thing that's happening, which is as in contact as that we are not connected.
Well, that's an interesting observation.
Right?
People feel that they are not connected.
Right. Even though, I got 2,000 people on Facebook. I'm in contact with
these friends.
Right. But level of connection, the depth of connection is not there. The sitting down like we do. I mean, I tell Paul this all the time. Once a week, I get the pleasure to actually sit down and not have a to-do list an agenda to follow.
Turn off your phone.
Right. That I could actually just have an exchange and not know where the road is going to take us, speaking of a load less traveled, and actually not prepare for it. I mean, talk about having sort of, you're going to go in, you're going to hold interest for an hour, okay? You got to trust to a certain extent your ability to do that on an intrinsic level, but at the same time, also trust that it's a journey you want to take with a little bit of unknown risk involved. I don't know what you're going to say to me. I don't know what Paul's going to interject. I don't know where we're going to end up as a group of people that spend an hour together at the end of this, individually and people that we're sharing with. This storytelling, this documentation
powerful.
Of our lives, right, which is happening even more so through things like, you know, live feeds on Facebook and things like that. It's not a new thing. It is an intrinsic human thing, I think, right?
To share and to, it's in a sense wanting to be witnessed. In a sense.
Interesting.
But I think when it comes back to your comment about feeling disconnected or feeling unconnected.
Right.
That's also when you can have interesting conversation that matters. Mm-hmm. When you can talk about things that you care about. Mm-hmm. You know, when I talk to people, I always say to them, in fact, I was just teaching this today, you know, what breaks your heart and what pisses you off is the basic foundation
range.
For your brand,
yeah,
right. For you as an individual, and
you got to explain that.
So let's say that again.
Talk about that.
Yeah, let's say that again.
So it's what breaks your heart.
What breaks your heart,
or what pisses you off,
or what pisses you off?
What gets to you?
That is
it's the foundation.
The foundations
for
of your
brand.
Okay.
So
give me an example.
Well, for instance, if we go back to the Apple. I'm sure, and Steve was very involved in certain kind of music and certain things, and I'm sure he was a little pissed off that he was in his garage,
right,
but he dropped out. He left college, right? Yeah. He dropped out, and he was like, I'm in my garage doing this thing, and it's like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he really kept tapping into his sense of thinking differently, being different. Going about it in a different way, and Apple was going under before they did that Think Different ad. That's the thing that pushed them really out front. So I think
Can I ask you a very technical question about branding, having been a PR person for a bunch of years, and I get into this debate or argument.
Everybody has an opinion, like a doctor.
Yeah, that's right. Branding,
being nice,
branding has
word.
Been described as several different things. One, it can be your story. That's kind of what you're saying here. Others say it's more emotional, subliminal.
It's all emotional.
Yeah, it's all emotion.
It's all emotional. And everything is emotional.
We have another show we do on
branding.
Talk
about something that scares the living daylights out of people to commit to.
Yeah.
An emotional expression of your life.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
it's real.
It's
a fake thing.
Right. So is it stated or is it, you know, it's like saying, gee, this is a fun restaurant. You can't say it's fun. It's got to feel fun. You can't say it's fun. You can't describe
it. Sure, you can say it's fun, but that's because you don't have the language muscle trained enough to express yourself differently. That's why there's certain words that people, oh, it's interesting. It's like if I hear somebody tell me my work is interesting, I just want to basically gouge my eyes out. It's like, tell me what you like about it, what you don't like about it. I can take that. Interesting for me means nothing.
It doesn't really tell anything.
What pisses you off and what...
Put you on the edge when you say interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Or that's nice. It's kind of like interesting.
I think to Anne's point, and to what you were saying too, I went and saw a presentation at UCI one time at their little incubator space, and the guy basically was talking about... And he had a slide, and I took a picture of it, and I use it on my Facebook cover page every once in a while. It said, invest in emotion.
It's all emotion, yeah.
Invest in emotion.
Right.
I think branding is emotion.
And investing in emotion is super, super important.
Yeah. But then we have other people, we do this branding show, and they talk about all the time, branding to them is the promise. Branding is what, if I buy this, I'll feel this way. If I buy this,
I don't think that's a sustainable approach.
It's a promise of what you will deliver. If I get this, it's going to have a certain quality. You know, Apple had a promise that it was going to be...
You're going to be hip and cool.
You're going to be hip and cool.
But would promise be a stronger word or aspire be a stronger word? Because one is emotion filled,
a little bit stronger.
Right? One is more emotion filled and action based, and it's you personally engaged. Promise is somebody giving you something. Aspire is something you have empowerment to approach. And I've told you this. I mean, a friend of mine who used to work for Merrill Lynch said that when they trained them, they trained them to basically that every sales situation is motivated by fear or greed.
Hmm.
Gain or loss, exactly.
Where we're at today, and I see this on the retail side of it, especially with luxury products or services, is that people buy for two reasons: they either buy to affirm, or they buy to aspire.
You said that before. I thought that's very
The difference is that those new words, affirm and aspire, are really dependent on the person.
Yes, and I think also when you're talking about that, luxury items, you're naturally, it's a certain level of people.
You're reaching for something, yeah.
A certain level of people, and they're going to be inspiring to something. Or they're going
aspiring,
and they're going to be affirming something.
But I think that applies, I think this day and age, especially with the, you know, sort of the universal exposure or overexposure, if you will, to other people's life standards, lifestyles, you know, somebody selling falafel on a beach in Trinidad because they chose to drop out and basically go do something out of the ordinary.
Who doesn't want to be inspired, put it that way.
Right. And I think aspiring could be to smaller goals.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe less price tag goals, maybe more personal. But there's an aspiration factor. I mean, I aspire to be the first person in my family to go to college somehow. I am affirming that I have achieved. You know, I think the interesting thing is that speaks to me about the change in the dynamic of society.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's the conscious level.
Yeah,
it's
there's a consciousness level. Right.
Yeah, there's a consciousness happening. We call it, you know, for lack of better, we call it like conscious marketing.
Right.
And everybody is more about the dream or what you're wanting to create than it is the pain point.
So you know what's interesting about that? Because when I went to business school, there was a thing about it was almost like subliminal unconscious. Like they wanted to put product in places for you and tempt you with them in times when you would be almost like a rat in a maze.
Open,
you're basically
weak.
easy pickings, basically. Easy pickings.
We're pretty educated now around all
that. And that's where I was going with this, is that was back in the day when you didn't absorb 2 hours of HGTV. You didn't absorb 3 hours of Travel Channel, cooking shows, reality television. So the marketplace, the profile end user, the person you are marketing to, in addition to the generational differences, has become more aware.
Absolutely. More educated, more aware.
And that was getting to my point.
I don't want to be manipulated.
Branding used to be subliminal.
Yeah, and so it was mostly going back to authenticity again and the importance of authenticity. Mm-hmm.
Branding used to be, in my opinion, subliminal. It was, therefore, imagery. You saw the horse, the girl on the horse with her hair flowing.
Actually, it was illegal to do subliminal advertising.
Well, yeah, I remember. It is true. But the idea is that there's
a
girl.
Was there a flash of a boob there in the Coca-Cola ad?
The girl's riding the horse, their hair's flowing, and then you have to decide, is this a women's feminine product or Coca-Cola?
Or butter.
Or butter, yes. Could be anything. And right. If I get this product, then I'll feel like this. I'll be free, and I'll be sexual, and I'll be all these things.
Some of that's still happening, certainly. Not only car advertising,
in pharmaceutical advertising, especially with testosterone therapy, or why the heck is a couple buying two antique bathtubs and then setting them up on a deck somewhere and sitting in them at the end of the ad? You know, when it's basically selling me Viagra or something like that. I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's like if you're selling me Viagra, why are they in two separate bathtubs? I don't understand. Is this a failed situation or what?
But my point is that I think that's the failure of all modern advertising today, is that we're searching for something more genuine, more authentic, something to connect, and suddenly we want to hear your story, how you built the company. We want to hear the story of whether you're corporate conscious.
All the companies that came out of garages.
Right.
Right.
Real.
We want to
real
hear
stuff.
We want to hear the story becomes more important than the imagery, the aspirational imagery.
But the story better be authentic.
Better be authentic, yeah.
Because people have a bullshit
big one right now.
Right.
Super big. Yeah. So the thing with the story like that, and I teach my clients to write stories and how to use a personal story in their marketing, their advertising. It is a story. It's like a movie. Movie based on
your life,
right, or the truth. It's embellished somewhat to create that excitement or that sense of curiosity or what else is going to happen.
If your life is not exciting for you, how can you expect to engage somebody else as being that is exciting for them? I mean, you need to have a handle on your material.
You have to understand what. If I work a lot with coaches and authors and speakers, things like that, and people in the health industry, you have to understand that some of the stories won't be interesting, but you need to write anyway. Mm-hmm. But there's a way to set your story up. Mm-hmm. I believe in my favorite thing is this, what I call the vivid story, or the story that's happening in the moment. So when you tell a story to someone, you're taking them on a journey. It's an emotional, back to emotions, an emotional journey. So you want to start with a interesting lead-in. And if you notice on the commercials, they're doing it all the time now. They're telling stories. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a day like any other day until all of a sudden I hit the lottery, right?
Mayhem.
Right, and then all hell broke loose.
Right, exactly.
But I think, so you lead somebody in with an interesting line, and then you start to tell a story about what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, like I use my personal life, what it was like for me in high school to be, left behind. I wasn't a good writer. I was dyslexic. I didn't really communicate well. Mm-hmm. And it's ironic that that's what I do now.
So let's focus on that for a second, if I can. How do you think that was that a motivator for you? That you were, was it a conscious motivator for you because that was part of your experience, that was part of your story, that you chose to write a different chapter, or was it just happenstance that you ended up doing that?
That's an interesting question. I think.
I have them every once in a while.
Yeah. I know that I'm driven. We were talking about what drives people, and people are driven by different things. Yeah. And it's kind of like, I call it, your purpose. Sometimes there's the one purpose you don't know about, and then there's the other purpose that you wish that's the one you had.
But sometimes you don't even know you don't even know the difference between the two until you have actually transitioned to a certain point. You've experienced enough the ability to discern, because it's like the old statement, It's like, you know, you can think you would react in a certain way under certain circumstances all day long. You could do think of it for years, but the only time you really know is when it actually happens.
When you're experiencing
you find yourself
it.
In it, right?
You're experiencing it. So I think for me, when I was younger, no, I had no idea. I just knew I was dyslexic, so I chose to go visual instead of to words.
Yeah.
And as I got older, it became more about words, telling stories, and
interesting.
Going in that direction. What I understand about it for myself is,
but you went through the path of visual. I think I think you got a real good handle on visual that possibly gave you a sense of being able to communicate and no longer be feeling limited because you are dyslexic. And then now here we are, basically going back and engaging in this thing that was a little bit of a problem, but you have the strength and shoring up of the fact that you can communicate visually.
And yeah, guess what? There's spell check.
Well, right, exactly. Well, but again, it's you know, I come culturally from you know, I was born and raised in the Middle East. There's language is different. There's what they call Latin languages versus, you know, other languages that are not as descriptive. And I find myself actually using what I learned from just, you know, literature and grammar and stuff from a different language base. I use that in my English communication, but it actually provides me a very strong strength because I understand the strength of visual imagery. And so I am involved in a visual environment, building places and putting in, you know, like experiences. We say we don't design interiors, we design experiences. But then taking that and having to describe it. If I was going to do that without having a very strong foundation and strong sense of self in the visual implementation, I think it would be hard. And so sometimes the road to get to where you need to get to is not something you are aware of, because in 1990, when I was in business school, if you had told me I was going to spend 10 years or 15 years, now 20 years almost, doing interior design, I'd say you're crazy.
Right.
I was going down the path. I was going to do a master's degree. I was going to go get that job with a pharmaceutical company or something. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe in 10 years I'd go to a nonprofit, you know, executive director position. That was my path. And then I couldn't go down that path anymore. And so, hey.
Made another choice.
Here's a certificate program for the summer for Interior Designers Institute down the street. Next thing I know, I'm doing it for 20 years, right? But it's really interesting. I don't know how we do this. I don't know how we as a society encourage people at a very impressionable point in their life to take that risk or provide them somewhat of a path. I mean, I don't know even if it's something that can be done. Because in a big part of it, it's your own personal journey, and you're going to want to have that path, and you're going to take that path when you're ready to take that path, or whatever that path may be. And so maybe trying to encourage people to do it is not right. I mean, how do you encourage the people that you work with? You're talking about life coaches. You're talking about people that you're working with. These are people that already have a sense of awareness, and yet you're working with them to get them to that level.
Mm-hmm. They have to go deeper. Actually, they don't have the same orientation as I do, so they're really, really good at what they do. Really good, right?
Okay.
When they're working with another person, but when I turn. You know, it's like turning
the
light on them, and they're like...
The photographer that's the subject now versus behind the camera?
Is it okay for me to... It's about being seen, right?
Right.
So part of it is about being seen and being known for what it is you do so that people can understand, oh, you could actually help me, which is awesome.
So what would you... I mean, you and I... We said this during the break. You and I could sit down here and talk for hours about this particular topic and see where the roads go. And I think we should probably plan on having you back and talking about this further
because
I don't think people really hear this conversation enough. And for whatever encouragement they may get out of hearing this discussion and exchange, I think there's a lot of value in having this out there. But I want to ask you, if you were to share with people both about the importance of branding, importance of storytelling, what would be like three things you want to have them take away from the show? Or two things?
Well,
what do we want to leave them with?
I think it's really, and it is scary, right? So it's something that we're generally not used to. However, when you can ask yourself those questions, you know, what pisses me off, what breaks my heart, what am I like when I'm in the zone with somebody and I'm truly, truly connected to either another person or to my work what are the characteristics? What shows up? Like, what are you about? Are you, like, super focused? Are you funny? Are you a geek? Are you, like, a science geek? Mm-hmm. You know, you want to take what kind of personality type are you, which is really important.
And accept it.
Blow it up, baby,
and then amplify it.
Bigger than life.
Right.
Yeah, you want it to be big so that it's standing out amongst all the other types. Like when you have a group of superheroes, mm-hmm. they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
They got a different costume. Mm-hmm. They got a different outfit. They might have the same, you know, their flesh and blood or whatever, but they all have a different point of view of how they do what it is they do.
You know, that's an interesting analogy that you just picked, because every one of those superheroes also has, I mean, and again, if it's a Stan
Kryptonite,
Lee
baby.
Or a Marvel, you know, kind of thing, the thing that makes them really appealing, I think, to people is that they have insecurities.
Yeah.
They have personal problems. They have relationship problems.
And yeah, that goes back to the Greek way of storytelling. You have to find the flaw in the hero.
Yeah, but that also becomes, you know, it's the hero's journey, right? So it's also... it's what makes you relatable. Mm-hmm. Like, I was laughing a little bit.
Now we're talking Joseph Campbell here.
Yeah,
right.
I was laughing a little bit when you were going, oh, you know, here's this guru. I'm like, I am really not that person. I am a little bit more like the rebel next door.
Yeah, but I was setting up the staging of the story, right?
Yeah, that was great. I was laughing about it. I was like, uh-huh. But storytelling mm-hmm. brings you connection mm-hmm. with another person mm-hmm. emotionally. And they go on the journey with you. Mm-hmm. That's the power of that. So in terms of that, I would say, you know, definitely people need to, you know, I teach this whole class where we look at every decade of your life and you pick out a defining moment
mm-hmm.
and then write a story.
Wow.
And it really releases for that person.
Paul over there is smiling. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. And
their DNA,
one.
Right? It's their DNA. It becomes obvious why they do what they do.
So let's give people the website again.
It's AnnBennettMarketing.com.
AnnBennettMarketing.com.
And spell Ann Bennett, because in today's world of individualism, the Ann could be...
A-Y-N, right? Exactly. So it's A-N-N, no E, B-E-N-N-E-T-T, marketing.com. And if you want to get... I have this really cool exercise about discovering your rebel voice.
So can you share it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So... if you go to my website, AnnBennettMarketing.com/rebel voice, you'll get this form, and it's fun, and it's like, who's your favorite person in history and why? Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite cartoon character and why? They're like these fun little things to write about, and it is extraordinary what you discover.
Oh, I'm going to have to do that.
It's cool, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys should go do it.
You know, it's a little bit deeper than those little things that come up on Facebook that says, you know, who's your, you know, what's your spirit animal and stuff like that.
Right.
And then you click on and find out. So you have to participate probably a little bit more in this.
Yeah.
But go to AnnBennettMarketing.com and take your, you know, finding your rebel voice. You know, it's really an interesting conversation. I walked into this room.
I
had no clue I was going to talk. I was going to touch on Aristotle, Socrates,
Joseph Campbell.
You slid in a little Ayn Rand in there a little bit, right? Like really softly with the spelling. She's quick, Paul, huh?
She is. She worked it all in the story.
And it's all about storytelling. I will add one thing. And again, I'm sharing this from personal experience on doing this show, okay? Put yourself in situations where either you engage with people that you don't know, or put yourself in situations where you are delving deeper with people that you do know about things that you don't usually talk about.
Right. Okay? You want to really have juicy conversations about things that you care about.
You define what juicy means, right?
Take it wherever you want.
Right, you take it wherever you want. but I will tell you this. It's not just because you are inquiring. And remember, two ears, one mouth, so listen twice as much as you speak. But, you know, you wouldn't know that listening to the show, right? I will admit that, right? But listen as well as share. But I'll tell you what's going to happen. It's not just about you finding about them or them finding out about you. What I have found, my experience of doing the show 3 years, is it really has given me a better understanding of me.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time you have those conversations with somebody, there's a part of you that gets reflected back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if you have an awareness of it, if you're not just going through the motions. And I don't care who you are, you cannot engage people for an hour over drinks or lunch and being genuinely open and willing to engage, okay? Not just the 8x10 kind of engagement. And not come out of that with some sort of awareness gain on your own part. Mm-hmm. So, thanks for being here, Ann.
Thanks for having me. It's really fun.
Really
fun. We could be talking about this forever.
Yeah, really, really fun. And join us next week as Paul shows his rebel voice.
I like that, too.
This will okay. This will work.
Yeah, this works. Okay. It's not Gaga, but...
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I don't think we're going to get him to go Gaga. Not in cargo shorts.
But I love Bowie.
Gaga wouldn't know him play her in her car. Okay.
I love Bowie.
But join us next week at The Rad Life on Wednesdays, always at 12 to 1. And next week at 1 to 2, we'll have another episode of Check Out California with my co-host, Craig Sullivan. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. I really have to say, I have a lot of favorite shows on episodes on the show and guests, but this was really fun. This was really, really fun. It's a lot of stuff that I eat and breathe, and to be able to talk about it this way, remember, storytelling... You are the brand of you. There is no such thing as...
Being you is the strongest brand you can be.
And be engaged. Be engaged. Be empowered in actually developing that brand of you. It's an exciting journey of exploration, I think.
Super fun. Super fun. Creative. And then people start to love their marketing.
Exactly. And develop it with authenticity of reflection of who you are. And if you're interested, check out, again, Ann Bennett, marketing.com. And I'm sure she will share with you as exciting a time as she just shared with me. I had a blast, seriously.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us.